Blog Talk Radio.
Well, aloha, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Kelly Wells, and I'm the host of PWT Talks NXT. Tonight, we're talking NXT for November the 8th, 2022. A show that was, you know, it was pretty decent. I don't know what I'm going to say about this show. It was just a wrestling show, and stuff happened on it. Wrestling matches were some of that stuff. I don't know if I have any real strong feelings, but we'll see if maybe I do as we get a little further into it. And I am sitting here in a two-man booth tonight with Bruce Hazelwood.
Hi, I am Bruce Hazelwood. Find me on Twitter at B_Lee253, though who knows how much longer that will be. And yeah, this was an up and down show, I guess, best way to put it.
Yeah, and the highs were not high, the lows were not low. Of course, I'm Gen X. I mean, that's how I'm supposed to feel about everything.
I'm a millennial, so I should be anxious about everything.
But there you go. So we'll see if we can find the apathy and the anxiety throughout this show, folks. We'll do our best. Your main event tonight. Oh, by the way, if you want to call us, that is 505-615-9345. We do have one caller waiting. We'll get to them after the main event, and you can email us pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. Okay. So Caden Carter and Katana Chance defending against Zoe Stark and Nikita Lyons. This supposedly like the culmination of a big story for Lyons and Stark, but I mean, they've wrestled what, like three matches together. It hasn't been a lot. They got their championship match, clear after that match that we were heading for a Zoe Stark heel turn, but hey, they got one more match out of it. And this was, I think in most respects, a better match. Because I'm usually pretty critical of her work. Nikita was pretty good tonight. Nothing went wrong, and it seemed like the match came off as planned. I grow very weary of matches that devolve into all four people wrestling a lot, a whole lot. I want to see that tag team formula stuff happening. I know it's face versus face, so you can kind of get away with it, but whatever. At the end, the champs retain, and I thought that if Stark had turned heel on Lyons in the first match, it at least kind of would be, it could storyline make some sense, because she should be kind of ticked off at that result when Lyons was the one who ate the pin. In this one, Lyons takes a shot from the champs, like puts herself on the line, and gets knocked out, and then Stark still gets hit with the pin. So she really doesn't have the argument this week. So I'm not sure why they went with the finish they did. It was all very clear. I mean, this was choreographed to death near the last minute or so. So they did what they set out to do. I just don't know why they did it this way. At any rate, we do have a new heel in Zoe Stark. Seemingly, we'll have her first feud with Nikita Lyons. I thought Nikita was kind of, and she still has to be protected after all this time, because she's still kind of not so great in the ring. So being in a tag team was really helping. And now she's not again. But hopefully she's come along far enough that a match between her and no-nonsense machine Zoe Stark could be interesting. It'll definitely be something that we talk about, Bruce. Let's say that.
Yeah, so nothing glaring, but like you, I just hate all those spots where, oh, hey, look, all four of us are going to get here to do things. Or, oh, hey, look, us teammates are going to just suddenly get in here and do choreographed vertical suplexes or something. It's just not good to me, I guess is the best way to put it. The thing here, too, I think with Nikita Lyons is you could just tell the whole time she was in the ring that she was just waiting for the heel turn to happen after the match. There really didn't seem to be no sense of at least from what I was watching, even when she took the kick from the attack for Stark at the end that took her out of the match, it just seemed like she didn't have any passion for this, for what she was doing out there. And I think it's because she was just dreading getting down by her partner. But if you're Nikita Lyons, you have to look at it this way. Like, they're going to strap the babyface rocket to you after this. And I don't think that's, what's the word? I don't think that that's any hot take or bold prediction here. I think they clearly want her to be a big time babyface, and they feel like the best way to do that is for her to overcome being turned on by her partner. I just don't know if she has it. And frankly, I don't really want to have to, you know, sit through her matches and her promos. I really don't think she has what it takes to do promos at the top level they want her to do right now, let alone the in-ring stuff. But, you know, like you said, today it was fine. They relied a lot more on using the tag team aspect of it to hide her, like you said. I think Carter and Chance are still doing much better than they were in the past. As I said, either a week or two ago, there's more story to their matches now instead of just, hey, let's get our flippy stuff in, let's get our spots in. They're actually telling some more stories, and so that's good. I didn't think it was the right time to have them lose a title tier, so I'm glad they didn't. I was anticipating you know how sometimes you like to just do shock stuff, and so I was wondering if they might do that here with another, just to keep us on our toes, but the heel turn definitely was the way to go. Predictable but necessary, both for Stark and for Lyons. Now the question is, will Lyons repay the trust that's going to be put in her from the spot that she's going to be put in, which at this point is a legitimate question to be asking. So,
yeah, I mean, they've given her lots of big spots, and so far she hasn't come through, but maybe now? I don't know. I find it, I'm irritated on behalf of some of the talent that's been let go, that they talk about the churn and they're like, if you're not improving in this amount of time, you get let go. And Lyons went a very long time without improving, but they didn't let her go because somebody wanted to push her really hard. So if you're not improving and somebody's not just like obsessed with you, then that's when you get fired. Whatever.
I mean, Carmen Electra is in the same boat, I think, and she's still there.
Well, Carmen Electra is definitely
Electra
not
Lopez.
There.
Electra Lopez. I was got the Electra part stuck in my head.
Yeah,
that's
cast
hilarious.
Yourself back to my generation, apparently.
late 90s, too? Come on. Early 2000s?
yeah, you were alive. I was a man.
I was a teenager.
I was kind of a man. I'm as much of a man as I am now. Okay, so let us go to the phone lines. This is Ryan. I said Ryan before the show, right? Yes. This is Ryan. And Ryan, how did you find this week's show?
Oh, it was a fine show as always. Always easily enjoy the show.
Yeah, I thought it was breezy, enjoyable. They move stuff forward. Yeah, I want to take something bigger from this, but I don't have any real big things to say. What are your main points tonight?
This is a little bit of a weird question. It's on the schism. They just have that smiley face on their attire. And I just watched a movie over the weekend named Smile, and I did some research on that movie. I guess they did a lot of promotion of, like, different, like, entertainment media, like, promoting the movie. I just wondered if this could be one of the things, because Joe Gacy has that real evil smile to him. So do you think maybe they have an agreement with that movie company?
I hadn't put those things together. I don't know if WWE films is still a thing. I actually don't. I watch all this stuff from NXT 8 years back, and I see commercials for WWE films, and I guess I don't even know if they're still doing that. Like for the most part,
got bought.
Yeah. Like they weren't making films. They were just buying films mostly. And, like Halle Berry kind of had a comeback movie and it was a WWE film and people were saying, why was she in a WWE film? I was like, she wasn't, like, she didn't know she was in one. She went and did the movie, and then WWE bought the rights to distribute it. So that's all that was. I think this is a coincidence. The smiley face is just like the false sense of happiness. They just want to use as simple a positive symbol as they can in order to get these guys across. I don't think that there's cross promotion here, and I don't know. I mean, any cross promotion would be short lived because a horror movie's day in the sun is going to be like 3 to 5 weeks at best for the most part. But since we're there, we can talk about Joe Gacy and the Schism. This was Gacy versus Grimes in your opener. Yeah, the feud that won't end. 10 minutes and 44 seconds. Joe Gacy goes over. If you didn't know that he was going to go over as a result of Ava Raine helping out in a big way for the first time, then I don't know what to tell you, folks. This was pretty choreographed. No, telegraphed is what I wanted the first time.
like the heel turn.
Yes. Yeah, these were the two big matches tonight, and it was really, really obvious to anybody who is any kind of long-term wrestling fan, I would think, to see what was coming. If you're a long-term wrestling fan, you didn't see this coming, I kind of wish I was in that boat. I wish that I could be surprised. But I can't take off the Booker hat no matter how I try. So, yes, Grimes versus Gacy. What I said in my report was really, really good match for Gacy. Pretty so-so ho-hum match for Grimes. Yeah, I don't know what to say other than that. If Gacy could have this level of opponent every time out and not be in squash matches that kind of show that he doesn't have very thrilling heel offense, I don't know. It's the Schism has some really, really fervent fans, and I've started to notice, and I don't know why. Bruce.
So to that last part, yeah, neither do I. To the match itself, yeah, ho-hum for Grimes. I noticed that the collision course wasn't hit so well for between the two. But I have to say, I think the fact that Gacy was wearing actual trunks, I think that did a lot to make me take him more seriously than him just wearing a button up and slack like he had been. Maybe that's why it seemed like the match came off better for him. It just seemed like there was more legitimacy, I guess, to him being in the ring with Cameron Grimes, who this feud, I mean, it's been going on for a good 6 months now, right? At least it feels like it's been going on for at least 6 months. And I think this is at least the second time that Gacy has gone over Grimes in one of these matches. So I just, was it Grimes that was on Main Event recently or the taping on Monday? So there was something. Yeah.
Very recently. Mm-hmm.
Maybe Deadline is going to be his final goodbye and he debuts at the Royal Rumble. I don't know. I just don't think that what they're, I don't know. I just feel like they're doing a disservice to Grimes and his character by keeping him, not just the fact that he's still entangled with Schism and Gacy, but the fact that his character seems to be trying to do its best to straddle the to-the-moon comedy gimmick while also being a bit serious, but I don't think too well. And, yeah, I think the best thing for him to do would just be get a fresh start, probably on Raw, maybe with a slight change to his gimmick that doesn't focus so much on the to-the-moon aspect and just more on, hey, I'm a badass wrestler from the South.
Yeah, maybe that. I'm fine with the to-the-moon thing. I'd like to see him go up due to the moon as a heel. Irritant. And eventually the same thing happens where people start to, against their wishes, they're like, oh, I think I like him now. I think that just kind of is what happened with him this time. I think he's destined to start his main roster run as a heel. I think he will be rejected more as a babyface by far. if he goes up and tries to do that and hang as a babyface on the main roster. I think he could be eased in as a heel. And you know, I say eased in, but maybe, you know, for a couple of years. I just hope he's there for a couple of years, that he's able to be there for a couple of years. Ryan, go ahead.
I have a question on Duke Hudson and Hale. Is the storyline supposed to be that he's going to end up corrupting her? Maybe she were to have a better heel on the female side again? Or am I wrong on this, do you think?
I do think that was the intent. I think that he was trying to snake Thea Hale away from this group to go in and disturb it. And the storyline got thrown all kinds of out of whack when they realized that Bodie Hayward's behavior was something that nobody wanted to be around anymore, and they fired him. They can still do the storyline, but they got to do it a little differently. They got to make Chase the one in the feud, even though he was going to be kind of ancillary to it, seemingly, that it was going to be Hayward versus Hudson. And now... And it felt more personal with Hayward because Hayward is a peer of Hale and not a teacher to her. So it kind of worked in that aspect a little better. And they were kayfabe roommates. So I think that there was going to be kind of that personal touch to it. And that's all out the window. So now they got to do it with Andre Chase. Yes, I do think that the intent is going to be for him to do that. I don't think he will succeed, and not because of anything storyline we've seen so far, but because Thea Hale is just so much fun to be around when she is like, her smile brings a smile to my face, and her ridiculous, she's so committed to everything. And my wife had not seen her until tonight, and she just loved her from the outset, just really liked her. So yes, I think that Hudson's trying to go in and disturb the shiz. I think that's what he's trying to do, but I don't think that he is. I wonder if he would have turned Bodie Hayward heel if Bodie had stayed around. Might as well roll this in with the Andre Chase match versus Charlie Dempsey. Third in the show, this match went 2 minutes and 58 seconds. Chase gets most of the offense, which still looks kind of silly, even though his offense is always very good, always very clean. Seeing a roughneck like Charlie Dempsey, a technical guy who will stretch you out, I just love it. I love it so much, and I'm going to love watching him work, I think. But yes, Dempsey over Chase when Duke Hudson throws in the towel. So... obviously, yes, really throws it. He threw the hell out of the towel. It's like, you know, that, I mean, that's best friends for the grizzled young veterans when they threw their towels and intentionally did that on the top. And now Duke tries to throw it through and he didn't learn. It's gonna get hung up. That's what's going to happen. Tope suicidas and towel spots. They can both go awry thanks to ropes. So, lots of story to be told here. Lots of steps left in this one. What did you think, Bruce?
So the Ryan question, Thea Hale's energy is so infectious that I think turning her heel would be actually doing a disservice to her. I think that her energy and her passion and just her ability to put her all, I mean, the way she was caressing that bucket tonight, find someone who holds the bucket like Thea Hale held that bucket tonight. She, babyface, she has a lot more to give than as a heel right now. That doesn't mean that in the future you can't turn her heel when she's able to hone that energy in a little better to the character that would need to be for the heel. But I think right now she needs to be consistently as a face. Though I do think, to what you were saying, the idea was to have Hudson, I was almost going to say Hayward, Hudson try and get Hale towards, you know, a little more of the healer side. But again, I just think that the plan here, the payoff is probably going to be obviously Hudson versus Chase, how I think they may have had to rush it more than they wanted to because of issues with Hayward. But, he, you know, it's something for Hudson to do. He's a big body. He does a lot of good stuff in the ring. I mentioned that he was a perfect person for Braun Breaker to squash in a title match, and they did it perfectly. So when it comes to Duke Hudson, I don't think he needs to be higher on the card, but I think where he's placed right now is perfect. And it gives him something different to do with his character. This kind of reminds me of when he had his hair versus hair stuff with Cameron Grimes and went a little more comedic. Here he's straddling that line between comedy and seriousness. And you know, he's doing a good job, and I think it's given a different dimension as well to Chase U as having a foil that isn't just the opponent of the week that they're up against, which they normally lose. But I think it's a good use of their TV time right now, and it also helps give Thea Hale some more time to develop while not putting too much pressure on her. Charlie Dubs is great. Definitely going to like seeing him. Like you, I love that kind of style, just stretching people. It definitely takes after his father. I don't know what they might do with Dempsey from here, but it seems like it's got to be Hudson and Chase. And where Hale comes into that, I think will be the big reveal.
Yeah, Dempsey was there, out there winning a match on NXT TV, and absolutely was just an also-ran. Like, this wasn't about him, like, at all. So I'm not even sure he benefited anything from this win. But whatever, he's got one in the win column. Ryan, what else do you have?
Heavy question on Apollo Crews. I guess his travels to Africa to find the next WWE superstar. Are you familiar with independent wrestling in Africa? Like, I know Power Udi had this federation where Luke Gallows got ripped off, and I think he had some issues too besides that even. And you think it's going to be someone from the Power Udi's federation, or is it going to be somebody else you think they could sign?
Oh, I don't know that I would believe there would be malfeasance in Nigeria. They email me all the time. I don't know about the scene there nearly. I know about a lot of scenes, but they are primarily in the States, in the UK, and in Japan, of course. So I don't know a lot about the scene there. It's hard to say which NXT is over there scouting. Is it the NXT that wants to take somebody who's already kind of done some of the legwork and has some of the concepts down, even though if they're going to make sure they were taught properly? Or is it going to be the NXT who just literally overlooks those people and instead just picks somebody out that they see out and about in a store, in a mall, and they look like a wrestler, and they say, hey, do you want a contract? I don't know what to expect. But I don't know enough about the scene over there to comment on it at all, Bruce.
Yeah, neither do I. What I will say is that when he made that note about finding that great African superstar, I said, ah, damn, it wasn't you, Apollo. Doesn't that suck? So, yeah, just for Apollo, I guess, because at one point they tried to make him back, you know, and it just didn't happen. And then I also thought that during his little selfie promo when he said, look into my eyes, Grayson, or whatever he said, I said, homie, you barely had eyes 2 weeks ago. So I thought that was kind of hilarious. But I don't know much about the scene beyond all I know is that they had that nice video of Omos making it back to Nigeria for the first time in 14 years to see his family, and there was just a very heartwarming scene. But beyond that, I don't know much of African wrestling at all. So,
yeah, I saw that minute long or whatever it was with Omos there too, and people shrieking because they did not know he was going to be there. His family, by the way, not as tall as he is. It's
not even close.
not a family full of Omases. It is just one guy who happened to strike it tall. All right. If you got one more there, Ryan.
Yeah, I got a question on this bar angle they're doing with Fallen Henley. Is there any reality that her family owns a bar, that she's like at least a bartender or was a bartender in real life, or that Keon James was like a real estate mongol, or is this just something that they completely made up, you know, were actually pretty creative and coming up with?
I would say zero chance of Keanu James being in any particularly studious venture. I would give that.
Well, all those three letter little, what are the acronyms that she had for her under her name?
I will give I will say there are negative odds for the first time ever that, that she is involved in real estate. She just has a look when she's on. I'm like, are they being serious with her? Like, is this, Am I supposed to take this seriously? Because it all just seems so intentionally cheap. Her and Giovanni, G, as she's called her once or twice on the show. Fallon Henley as a bartender, I could easily buy. I don't know that she was. Information on her real life is, but wouldn't be surprised. I think this is a bar I've been to. I was in Orlando last year. No, gosh, it's been like 3 years. I guess it's been like 3 years. And I saw Tom there briefly. I was there with my wife. Like, we were just there anyway. But then I saw Tom. Tom Stoutwell. We were there, and stopped into two different bars while we were there. And this, pretty sure, is one of them. Don't know if this is a family bar. I don't think so. I think this is a place they rented out one night, and then they shot a bunch of angles there, maybe a couple different nights. But I think that, I don't know. I won't. This is all very stupid because it's being acted very poorly by almost everyone involved, aside from Josh Briggs, who's kind of okay in his role, like way far away from the main part of the scene. Still doing the best work of anybody in an acting capacity. But I don't think this is based in too much reality. In fact, I think they're going really high concept and really back to almost, and this almost really feels like it could have stepped out of the late 80s to me, the late 80s or the early 90s, like on one of those straight to video, like Rampage 92. And then for some reason, everybody has a food fight at Oktoberfest. That's a real one that happened on one of these. I just remember I remember Jim the Anvil Neidhart wearing lederhosen, and it's one of the funniest things I've ever seen. So, I don't know, Bruce, do you hang with Fallon Henley? Are you homies?
No, I would definitely feel out of place at a place that that she frequents with her friends, because outside of Keanu James' tan, there was not a shot of melanin in that scene. So yeah, beyond that, I've been saying for maybe a month now that Fallon Henley has been improving and been the most impressive to me out of the trio, both in the ring and as a character. Briggs is Briggs in the ring. I know what he does. I think he has excites. And I think here, she was the most believable person out of all five of them that were in the scene. And, I mean, Jensen is just, he's just, how do you as a trained actor have, you know, make it through scenes with Brooke Jensen in them is what I want to know.
The word we use for what Jensen is doing is terrible. we have that word in acting. We call it terrible acting. It's very difficult when you're opposite that, when somebody's mugging like that, because they're soaking up all the energy and all the reactions, but it's like, everybody's cringing and you know it, and there's nothing you can do. There's nothing you can do to bring that actor more toward you. I thought Josh by far was the best part of this scene. Maybe it's just because he did so little.
Exactly. That's the thing. He wasn't asked to do much.
I thought Fallon was, it wasn't demonstrative acting. It felt rehearsed. It felt recently memorized. That's what I will say about it. It was not bad. It was a lot better than when she first arrived on the scene and a whole swath of women showed up. And I was like, man, do they have anything with any of them? And we've started to see reasons for each one having been brought on. And I thought she was fine. She was certainly better than Kiana or Jensen. I don't get taking your worst actor on the roster and being like, you, sir, are comic relief. Like, what? Is he funny in real life? Like, he's got to be. Because otherwise, why do you keep going back to this dead end? Man, oh, man. I guess that's that scene. And what's weird is I say all this, but I'm actually intrigued by the storyline. Because it's also bonkers and dopey and like, and it kind of seems like it could come out of a telenovela, this thing with this evil real estate agent trying to buy and probably bulldoze this, oh my God, that would be a hilarious ending. She buys it and destroys it. That's like the storyline.
Right in front of their faces.
Right. And like, they have a wrestling match, which apparently solved the problem of her entire family history being absolutely destroyed and taken from her. Just put Fallon Henley through the ringer for no reason, like a full year of James destroying her life in more personal ways.
Kelly is a nice person, everybody.
I was just going to say, I might not be okay, guys. I really might not. Okay, so that's that. We thank you, Ryan, as always, for the call. Let's go to the other long match. Match of the night, in fact, Axiom versus JD McDonagh. 13 minutes and 54 seconds. Referee stoppage. I thought that Axiom gained a lot in defeat here. This match woke up a crowd that came in fairly cold, but then went ice cold during Braun and Vaughn. So, I mean, a lot of work had to be done to get this crowd up. And that did indeed happen with the Axiom versus JD McDonagh match. Axiom got some really believable near falls. And I'm like, I don't know how high they're going to move them up the card. But I really bought into a couple of those near falls. And I thought, JD just lost a big match. This is historically when those guys can absorb a loss. And it's not that bad. Because you know they're going to be built up, but maybe while they've been kicked down, might as well give them one more chance to make somebody else look really good. So I really thought they might do it. And they still didn't go all the way with just having McDonagh pin him. They had the referee stop it with that spot where it looked like Axiom's leg was, they really did make it look like it was bending in a way that should not be. Very much in the sense that Alexa Bliss has that thing where she can do with her arms, where it makes it look like it's been just like broken the wrong way because she can just do that with her arms.
I'll need to send you a picture of my left arm sometimes because I did break it. So it looks like I can do that.
Oh, for fun.
Oh yeah, it looks like my arm bends at like more like beyond 180 degrees. So yeah, that just
yeah. I had a cool thing where I broke my fibula 3 years ago,
oh. And
what I can do from that is be in pain kind of a lot of the time. Yeah, like I'm always worried. Like if I run a few feet or if I dance or something, I'm like I could break my fibula because last time it was basically living life. That led to me breaking my fibula. Literally was just dancing with a friend, which I have done 1,000 times. Just goofy dancing because that's what I do. I get up and I amuse strangers.
Liza Minnelli lies. You were out there getting down, Kelly. We all know you're a dancing fiend.
I can kind of move. The problem is that I can't memorize steps. So on stage, I was not asked to dance because, like, even though I could kind of move, my memory for lines is inversely proportionate to my memory for steps. They're like, Kelly, go left. It's all you got to do. And I'm like, you say where now? Like, I just no idea. Like, I definitely a few times spun in the wrong direction. 15 people doing one spin on stage, one fucking asshole. Sorry. I forgot where I was for a second. Spinning the wrong way, me. Oh, my God. I feel so stupid. Like, I go there, and I'm going to be honest. I could out-act just about everybody at my college. But dancing? Oh, man.
Now, if they made dancing steps in, like, New Japan steps or matches, then you'd be golden. But they don't have that here, unfortunately.
I've always wondered if I could have, like, if I had gone into wrestling, would I be able to memorize that, or would, like, the dancing part of my brain take over? And it was like headlock. No, I mean armbar. No, I mean Canadian destroyer. I can't remember.
Wow, that's a big ramp up in moves. Okay.
That's what I'm saying. I wanted two things that seemed very, very different, which is the confusion that I would feel. Okay. Where the hell were we?
We were discussing Axiom and JD McDonagh's leg and knee, and yes.
Sure. Talking about the match of the night, and somehow we get to me breaking my leg dancing. Okay, this match, it was good, Bruce.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was great. I'm just, you know, McDonagh, you either like him or you don't for different reasons. If Axiom doesn't have bad matches, that three-setter with Nathan Fraser was, you know, three of the best matches you're going to see in NXT in the past couple of months, especially that final one of the matches of the year. This was a good match, though, and I do like the amount of offense that Axiom was able to get here because he's coming off that series loss to Fraser, and he needed some kind of a bounce back. Yes, he ended up losing, but it wasn't because of being choked out or being pinned. It's because the heel, who in the little promo they showed beforehand in the back, the little interaction they had, the heel said he was going to do something about, I don't know if he meant that he was going to take out his leg, but mentioned something about, he talked about how he thinks Fraser has a C4C, some kind of sprain or whatnot. And so here he's kind of going off that, and Booker kept yelling, I heard a pop. And I'm thinking, how are you going to hear a pop with your headphones over your ears? It's not a, okay, wrong, you know, whatever. But the post-match promo, he reiterated that was kind of his goal by saying, that's not a tear. That's just a grade two or three sprain because I'm a nice guy. You know, so he's not just justifying what he did and why he did it, but he's also providing a reason to why it wasn't worse. And I think after how he's been built, it's been a trudge to get this character to where it is now. I think I think Dragunov is really the person that helped pull it out of him. But I think now that character's at a point where this kind of stuff is going to become his signature, almost like Pete Dunne snapping fingers every match. He's going to go after body parts. And again, with how his character's been portrayed, I think this is a good call for him. It also helps protect Axiom, again, because he didn't succumb to an actual defeat, the ref called it, and he was out there, you could argue, getting the better of McDonagh throughout the match. So I think this not only was the best match of the night, but I think how it played out, the angle, and how it led to him calling out Apollo Crews to set up that number one contenders match, essentially, I think it was the best segment overall throughout the night.
Oh, yeah, I really don't think there was any competition. And nobody wants to see a strong technical 14-minute match end with ref stoppage after like a full 30 seconds to a minute of checking on a guy. All that said, this is by far the match I would suggest most from NXT TV from the last few months, unless, I don't know, maybe that last Fraser Axiom match.
Yeah. The one thing I will say to add on is so you have the legit injury to R-Truth last week to the leg. Kind of seems a bit odd to go right back to one here, but I thought it was a further bit of cruelty that they had Tom Caster as the ref in this match. And Tom Caster, if you remember back in the day, he was the one who during a tag team match, his leg actually broke and he still counted the pin because it was his leg broke as he went to go count the pin for the finish, and he counted the pin, but he had to immediately grab his leg because it had snapped. So I don't think they thought about that, but I just noticed that when I saw that he was the ref, I was like, ooh, that's kind of a deep cut there. So just throwing that out there. I don't suggest anyone really looks it up because it's kind of grotesque, but I think the video is out there if you are so inclined to witness Tom Caster freaking his leg and still counting the pin.
Tom Caster had to be pretty pissed off when that happened. He'd be like, I became a referee and not a wrestler for a reason. I'm not supposed to be the one in the line of fire, but like it can be a really physical job. And I know that, Andre's best friend, Tim White. Man. Tim White.
The Hell in a Cell match.
Yeah. He had, physical things that popped up, over the years quite often. Cause he'd take bumps and he was willing to do what the job needed of him. But, I mean, he didn't live life in a gym, and that was clear when he was out there. But yeah, that kind of stuff happened. So, two varying scenes of various quality. We got Carmelo Hayes and Trick Williams in a barber shop, and Josh the Barber maybe putting over Wesley a little bit too much. And then we've got a scene with Bron Breakker and Von Wagner. Not sure why they decided, hey, we're going to have one only semi-scripted scene. We're just going to let these guys do what comes naturally. So I'm going to be the one to beat you. Just what they couldn't think of anything beyond the most simple. This was like 2 4-year-olds arguing. It was, I don't,
including the lack of charisma.
Yeah, it was like, this is the kind of thing that like the babysitter films because it's oh so precious.
like two little kids arguing over whether it's raining or it's sprinkling.
Yeah, that's the one I was referencing.
Yep.
You poked my heart. I'm so glad you knew the exact video I was talking about.
Sprinkling. Mama says it's raining.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, the barbershop, good stuff. And, you know, part of this is putting people in a pre-recorded scene and putting other people in a live scene. Another part of it.
They should have inverted that when you're thinking about it, what they did here. But.
Right. The other aspect here, putting good performers in one scene and bad performers in another scene. In acting, we call them terrible actors. So Grayson Waller out there, this is the second time he's had to go out there and mediate. Like, he had to mediate the Roxanne Perez, Cora Jade. Do you think he'll just quit the business? He's like,
oh gosh, I don't know. He seemed to be having fun out there with his faces and his FaceTime video or live video. And when Mr. Stone got thrown over by Bron Breakker, we saw Waller just like laugh and like smile at him. Right. So yeah, he's having fun. I will say that much.
Yeah, but he's got to go to the back and weep openly, right? I mean, it's got to be like a call to his mom, like, I don't know why they keep pairing me with these people.
I had to talk to you with Bron Breakker and Von Wagner. What the hell's going on?
His mom drives to Orlando and picks him up.
His mom drives to Orlando and walks right into Shawn Michaels' office, like, you get my baby boy some better segments. Well, in an Australian accent, of course, but...
Oh, yes, right. I forgot about that. It's like, wait, where are you trying to make her from? Okay. I don't know that I can pile on to that scene. It was bad, and next week they're going to have a match, and it'll probably be somewhat palatable. Neither one of these guys, they can both work up to pretty good opponents' level of work. We'll see if they can raise each other's level, because we don't have a dynamo in here to kind of lead the other one. But they are both, Braun is, I feel like he's kind of plateaued, but he's decent. And then Wagner has gotten quite a bit better, but I don't know that his ceiling is overly high. And then on the other hand, you got the scene with Trick and Mello. Just lots of fun there. Like, and finding ways, even as heels, to put over Wes Lee, which is the job. Wes Lee, for his part, has another wonderful babyface promo that just makes you forget further that this guy was a stoner in a cheesy tag team. And he's just out there spitting fire in these small segments on his own, promoting the hell out of a match that's going to happen in just a week's time. Next week is a contract signing. A contract signing between these two sides could be really good stuff. A tale of two scenes, Bruce.
I'll hit the barbershop and Wesley first. Ever since that first re-debut vignette for Wesley where he's talking about he's lost, he's going on that journey, I've been fully behind him. So I have not been surprised at his journey since then and at his success and how well he's done, because even though his whole career, he's been in a tag team or a stable the entire time, I always pegged him as someone who had something in him that, if not world title level, he could definitely be, you know, your U.S. champion, intercontinental title, North American championship level. And he's right there right now. And the biggest concern we had for him when he came back as a singles star was, could he do the live promos well? And every time they go back, I want to say when they go back, it's done live. If it's not, it doesn't seem like it's, if it doesn't have the earlier today or if it doesn't like a video, I try to give the benefit of the doubt that when they go back to McKenzie, they are doing it live. He has, I think, just done very well on every single one. And again, tonight, did it again. He's able to, how do I put this? He knows he's not the most sizable and daunting or even intimidating figure any sort of way, but yet he's able to put over that fact without making it seem like he's too down on himself or looking for pity, while also putting over how he is not going to give up. He does that very well, and that's a nice line for a babyface of his size to straddle. Mello, Williams, doing well. Don't worry about them when it comes to being on the mic. I know there have been talks about Mello being stuck in the North American Championship. And this leads me to actually the Waller Effect segment, because the thing that was most interesting to me was actually the ticker on the bottom, all the comments. One of the comments, I forgot who they had it as tagged, one of the fake accounts, but it was talking about how they're mad that Carmelo Hayes is in the North American division while Von Wagner gets the title at the NXT Championship. And, you know, yes, I really thought it was.
You say fake account, and I'm like, oh, that sounds pretty real to me. Something that somebody would absolutely tweet.
Yeah, they did have the at WWE in their comment on the ticker. But the thing I think that Carmelo Hayes needed to say, and I think he did well in doing so, was he said, I made that a championship. It made it more notable than the actual NXT title. He said it differently in a better way that Carmelo could say. But that's what we've been saying the entire time that Hayes has been champion while Breaker has been champion. We forget that Breaker's a champion. We come because we want to watch Hayes. And then we're like, oh, yeah, there's also Breaker. And I don't think that's changed yet. I still think that Breaker being champion is Stale, I guess. Waller brought up one of the comments that said, I want to see anybody be Braun Breaker, and there are probably a lot of people out there. But going back to the ticker, not only did Little Jimmy enter the chat one time and said, what's up, Grayson, and something along those lines to kind of call him out, but I'm guessing it was Scripps. There were two things on the ticker that had backslashes and forward slashes sandwiching words. And the first time it said, I'm coming soon. And the second time, I don't remember what it said. I didn't get the shot, but that was the second time tonight that Scripps had used graphics or the arena to announce that they will be appearing soon. I'm assuming that not this month, it'll be at Deadline, but that's a lot of time between now and then. So it's a month. So who knows if they have the patience to wait a month or if they'll actually do it sooner. So just pointing those out. And yeah, Grayson Waller, he's the saving grace of these Grayson Waller effects. The fact that it wasn't just Perez and Jade, but he also had to do the Apollo Crews thing too. So they put him in these segments where they know the other people aren't the greatest at promos, but they know they can rely on him to make sure that the segment, if not goes smoothly, at least doesn't devolve into chaos, which it had a chance to do here, because when we talk about scripted promos, these two are the reasons why you need scripted promos. As soon as Wagner said something that threw Breaker off his game, he just started yelling again. And that's what Braun Breaker does. And Wagner just, he has the same tone for everything he says. There's no inflection. There's no anything. So kudos to Waller. And I just feel sorry for you that you have to do this match and Rose versus Fire in a last woman standing match. It's just going to take a lot of nine counts. And yeah, so looking forward to next week.
Yeah, Breaker started yelling at a spot where it didn't seem like it was appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
And it was he didn't get as big a reaction as he was hoping to his line. I learned from guys like Ciampa, guys like Gargano. If you want to get what you want, you have to take it. And I'm like, what did just happened to you? And then we get the question faced at Wagner, and Wagner goes, who was it? Who asked this? Joe Blow. And I was like, what is happening? What is on my screen? I was just, I can't. And all I thought about the whole scene was Waller. And the other thing is, these talk segments, I'm trying to get as much information out as I can. So I actually did not even see that there was a ticker. You started talking about the ticker. I'm like, what is he talking about? I didn't see it because my head's in it the whole time. I'm just typing what they're saying and occasionally looking up at their body language. I did not see this ticker. So I can't add on to the scripts thing. But there
I
you
have
go.
Some shots on my timeline, but I'm guessing that the segment is also up on YouTube and you'll be able to go through it again.
Right.
It went through about one and a half, maybe two rotations, so you'll be able to see at least one or two of the messages, or several of the messages at least twice.
Didn't think that was a segment I was going to watch again in my life. So I don't know. We'll see if I'm brave enough. Brutus Creed versus Damon Kemp in a 5-minute challenge. Well, this went 2:47. a disqualification when Brutus Creed says, what the hell? And he takes out Damon Kemp with the chair. This was the sixth match of the night, sixth heel winner. But of course, Brutus comes off as kind of the winner because he's destroying Kemp out there. Kemp definitely took nothing from this win. Veer and Sangha, we knew that they would face the Creed brothers eventually. We didn't know that they would face them first, but it seems like that's what's going to happen. Veer and Sangha just on the perch, looking down at Brutus Creed and Julius Creed and Ivy Nile. Somewhere, Valentina Feroce is crying, saying like, "Partner's injured, Uncle Sangha left. I literally get no TV time anymore."
Beyond being in the replay,
they could make this a mixed six person. If they were willing to move Valentina into the group with these guys, do a real odd tripling. Is that what you call this?
I guess so.
I suppose. But there you go. Kemp over Creed, kind of, in 2 minutes and 47 seconds. And we're on a collision course with Monster Teams, Bruce.
Yeah, I have a few issues with this segment. I'm going to call it a segment since it's a match. The first is that, okay, I get it. 5 minutes. I understand the point of this isn't actually for Brutus to try and win. It's for Brutus to beat the hell out of Damon Kemp for 5 minutes. So why not just take the 5 minutes to beat him and then use the chair on him after? Further, if you're going to use the chair on him to get the DQ, why do you only hit him 3 times total? Why don't you just waylay him like he did to you a couple weeks ago? It just didn't make sense to me, because the whole point of this happening was you getting revenge, your 5 minutes with him, for what he did to you and putting your brother through what he did with that ambulance match. Well, I'm surprised I didn't say ambulance for once. Why didn't you just take the chair and brutalize him with 10, 15 shots like he did to you? The psychology here just didn't click for me. On the other hand, I do appreciate Brutus going out there and trying to beat up on Kemp a little bit before the match started, before the 5 minutes started. That part worked. It was just everything after that that didn't make sense to me. Regarding a team, like, go Valentina, as long as Kemp goes with the story of, I'm just trying to find some vagabonds or some people down on their luck who don't really have anyone associated with them to bring on to his team. Maybe he pays them. I don't know, but I mean, I'm not necessarily sure what the end game is for this, because I would have thought the ambulance match would have been sort of an ender, because what we're getting now in NXT is we're getting feuds where they've been entangled too long. You look at not just Cameron Grimes and Joe Gacy from earlier, but Mandy Rose and Alba Fire. You're looking at the Kemps and Creed. Kemp and the Creeds. Carmelo Hayes and Wes Lee, even though it seems fresh, they've literally been in each other's matches and angles since the summertime. Williams had a couple matches with Wes Lee as well. So I feel like we're now going a little too far into extending feuds instead of finding some good feud enders. You know, 3 months feuds to build people up and to get them a little further up on the card, those are fine. You don't need to have every feud be 6-9 months.
All right. Well, I had something else that I was thinking, but it done kicked out of my head. That'll happen. You know what it was? A 5-minute challenge. I thought a chair just might be legal. Like, when they grabbed the chair, I was like, I don't even know if this is going to trigger a disqualification. And then Kemp brings it into the ring. The referee's like, a chair. Well, I better see how this plays out. Just like he sees it there, doesn't kick it out of the ring or anything, has a chance, doesn't do it. And then, like, and it's there. It's just in the ring for like a minute and a half. And then Brutus uses it. The ref's like, well, this is totally out of left field. And he calls for the bell. I thought that maybe it was going to be allowable. It's fine, but I guess maybe they didn't see how it would be confusing. But I thought maybe it was just going to be allowable, that this was like 5 minutes, anything goes, this is your reward, your revenge, whatever. Okay, we had two other matches in this thing. Hank Walker versus Channing Stacks Lorenzo. Stacks wins the singles match. I didn't know it was going to happen. Stacks, more NXT singles wins than Bobby Fish. 3 minutes and 28 seconds. Stacks goes over Hank Walker. Hank does his thing. He's an outsider. He can absorb losses. I was pleased for Stacks, because he's in a pretty bad place where he used to be in a pretty big group, and he was one of the fall guys, but at least he had stuff going on. He had a regular tag team. He had all this stuff that I felt he needed. Now he's just kind of adrift, and the only other person in his faction is injured and can't work, and he's playing second fiddle to a guy who himself was slipping down the card even before his injury. And he goes over here. So don't know if there's going to be any feud for Stacks, but he did a thing. The other match, Saul Ruca versus Electra Lopez. I didn't time this because I couldn't find my phone during this match, but it was about 3 minutes long. Electra, before she left, was really one of the worst wrestlers I've ever seen on TV. Like, she clearly was not ready to be wrestling matches on TV. Stuff was slow, not impactful. It all looked like practice, and it was really, really rough. And now she comes back, and she's hitting stuff with some decent impact. She's not like a savant, but she's out there being completely competent in what she's doing. And then they put her against Sol Ruka, who is really slow and looks like she's working a PC match and is just not really TV ready. I don't know why they gave Sol Ruka all these vignettes if it just wasn't time. Like, they brought her on this show and I think she's 0 for 3. Yeah, like, why? And they even overhauled her entrance thing with like the waves coming in and everything. Yeah, they're putting effort into the production of somebody who is literally the lowest person on their totem pole, the lowest on TV. Would have been nice to see Elektra punch it up a little bit, but I guess that time will come, and they wanted to start out with a win. So on the last two matches, Bruce.
Hank Walker also more wins than Bobby Fish in singles matches, after he beat Big Body Hobby a couple weeks ago. So let's not let that little fact slip out of the way. You know, not to be in defense of Stax here, but if Stax lost to Hank Walker, then what the hell are you really doing with Stax at this point, right? You could have kept him off TV and done vignettes with him and D'Angelo while D'Angelo recovers, because they said the injury's not as severe as they first thought. Said you have him out. His match with Nakamura last week, that was a pretty good match, but I'm going to credit more of that to being in the ring with Nakamura than it was with, you know, Stax necessarily being a great worker. Here, I think he was able to do kind of the best you can with someone as green as Hank Walker. I mean, Hank still has a bad Thez press, but Stax was pretty good in what he did. I mean, he sold well for the bigger man, and he ended up getting the victory, which also makes sense in kayfabe because he's the more experienced. All Hank has on him is size and strength, or our size and strength. So he had to get the win here. Otherwise, you're just making him basically Santino Morella level, I guess you could say. And you don't want that with someone who obviously you had high hopes for in his development. If you put him in such in a group that at the time was going to be projected to the future that they were going to play a big role. And they did for a time until the issues with Troy Donovan and then Legado del Fantasma being moved over. I think all that happened a lot quicker than they expected it to happen. So he has to go and get the victory here. Again, what they do, who knows, but it's also not, you can also just have some random no-story matches that are there with two people who haven't had any interactions or any stories going on, and use those to build people up. And they might be doing that here with Stax. Also get some more experience in the ring out there live in front of a crowd. When it comes to Ruka and Elektra Lopez, Elektra Lopez also got a revamped entrance and also attire and a look to her. I think she just comes off looking more, what's the word I'm looking for here? It's cool, yes, but I think this entrance, the attire, the entrance look, the in-ring look, I think it gives her more of a sense of credibility than she had before. With Sol Ruka's entrance,
the poor girl though, she comes out and has her entrance down the ramp and looks like she belongs there, and gets into the ring, faces the hard cam, and she's just about to do some kind of pose or some kind of taunt, something, right when she hits. The spot where she's in the hard cam, and they go to replays. I was like, this is literally our first chance to see what she does when she goes out, like her thing, when she, her pre-match thing. And they just went to recaps.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you brought up Sol Ruka's entrance, because when they did that whole full screen graphic thing and the waves, the music, you know what it reminded me of? I want to see if you can guess this.
I was going to say a screensaver. I
mean, that's a good one, but no.
Teletubbies?
It's wrestling related. I'll say that.
Bash at the Beach.
Kofi Kingston's debut vignettes. That's what I was reminded of.
Oh, yeah.
And those, you don't want to ever be compared to Kofi Kingston debut vignettes. Let's just put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not doing her any favors. Like you said, if she's clearly not comfortable enough to be on TV yet. Maybe during PC matches and live shows, she's out there and she's doing well, but maybe when right now she's just not at the comfortability level to be out there live on camera in front of the entire nation. So then why, you know, it's not going well when after all those vignettes, you lose your debut match. Like that has to be a signal right away that there's something not going well. So unfortunately, Faruka, she just, like you said, she seems a step slower or a step behind. And when you're a step behind Electra Lopez, who also is a bit green, that's not saying a lot for your development, unfortunately, for Faruka. But I am more excited to see the further development of Lopez now that she's maybe her affiliation with Legado had us feeling like she had to be at that level. And now that she's separated from them, maybe now we'll recalibrate ourselves to understanding the level that she's at right now and not expecting her to be at a certain level because of who she was associated with before.
Yeah, the other thing I thought was hilarious about the Sol Ruka full screen thing is that it was right after the end of the Scripps video, as if they just wanted to undercut the seriousness of that immediately. I saw a wave and I was like, are they kidding? Is the editor just having a laugh? Is this whole episode an F around?
Maybe Scripps is the editor.
There you go. Scripps just thought it would be funny. Okay, so other cleanup on the show. Scripps, JC Jane and Mandy Rose had a little video conference. Alba Fire done beat up JC Jane, and we've got a collision course with a championship match that I genuinely think Alba Fire is going to win. I genuinely do. Mackenzie Mitchell talked to Indy Hartwell, and Indy later talked to Roxanne Perez. I'm very interested to find out if Indy is also turning heel or if she is just finding a darker and more serious
side
to her face character. And I think it's that. But I felt like genuinely bummed. Like I felt sad for the Roxanne character that she was like she tried to reach out and like she's literally just trying to gas up a friend and gets rebuffed. I'm like, she just went through all that stuff. But yeah, maybe she can hang with Fallon Henley and their lives can be ruined together. Cora Jade cut a little promo on Wendy Chu, said you inter-, and she went pretty, I mean, this was very personal. Wendy Chu, you're the one who sat alone at the lunch table and waited for a text that would never come wanting to be your friend. Made me feel real old because the idea of being that age and getting a text, not a real thing for those of us born in 1977.
Or even 88 for a certain bit.
Shut up. Just don't. Don't you, mister.
Up until about high school.
Yeah. And I thought Cora was, she's really kind of getting into her element. And, you know, the live stuff is still a little bit tougher, but I thought she was pretty competent here. Donovan Dijak, as I'm seeing his name is maybe going to be, had another promo. They're not really shying away from it at this point. They're mostly showing his face, which means it's probably very close to happening. Maybe as soon as next week's halfway, like, very special episode of NXT.
He's not Attack Breaker after he defeats Von Wagner.
Ooh, that could be.
I think that's how they're going to re-debut. He made a point last week that he's going to go after the NXT Championship.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that could be. You know what? I like it. I am shamelessly hitching myself to that wagon and claiming the idea as my own. Next week, Von versus Braun. McDonough versus Cruz, Rose versus Fire, Bruce.
Yeah, so I'm going to hit the JC Jane part last. I just completely either missed the Cora Jade promo or just blocked it from my mind, so I can't say much on that. But when it comes to the Indy Hartwell and Roxanne Perez thing, I thought this was a very, very I thought that this little 30 seconds or so had so much to unpack in a good way. I'm in agreement with you that this is just Hartwell being serious, and she's trying to instill onto Perez the naivety, or she's trying to instill into Perez the stuff that will get her out of the naivety that Hartwell had before she went on this more serious run, which has resulted in her best, as Vic Joseph said last week, her best single streak of her career. Hartwell is just trying to use that tough love on Perez in my eyes, and I thought it was so good today how Perez's face, as Hartwell was talking, it just showed extreme naive shock to what was being told to her, because she still sees things as in this more, if not altruistic, more positive way of how things can be. And Indy Hart was trying to tell her, like, look, this is how it goes for most of us. Believe me, it's going to happen to you too. And Perez, I don't know if they put thought into this either, but Perez was also wearing black, and Hartwell's been wearing more darker colors lately too. Perez was wearing dark colors in her feud with Jade when she wanted to go a little more serious. So I wonder if they're going to try and have Hartwell be the kind of the catalyst further for Perez to be more serious and use that attire, as they usually do in the WWE, have the black attire to signal some kind of aggressiveness or dark side shift. But I do think this may culminate in a Perez-Hartwell match, possibly a Deadline as one of the cool-down or opener matches, or the NXT show after Deadline. And I think at this point, it will be a good a gauge of where the two are after they have a match with each other, because Hartwell, since she's turned to more of a strong style, I think her in-ring has looked so much better. And then Perez, her in-ring has, I think, plateaued a little bit. But when it seems to be the best is when she has to bring out that strong style, like when she had her match with Mako Satomura. I'm intrigued by what's going to happen with these two moving forward, and just how much those words that were said tonight play a factor into the eventual match between these two. Because it seems like what they're heading toward is a match between the two of them. With JC Jane, this is the thing that it wasn't just me. It was everyone on the timeline, including Cam. Of course, Cam said it funnier than me, but who the hell is spending $4K at a mall these days? I mean, is she buying Zales or Hot Topic, like the actual stores? Nobody's dropping $4K at a mall. I mean,
I live 2 miles from the Mall of America. You could spend your 401K at the mall.
I was going to say, the anomalous Mall of America in Minnesota out the way, who is spending $4K at a mall these days, Kelly?
It is probably not that common, but because my local mall, the Mall of America is my local mall. It is the closest mall to me. I go there often. Like I'm there almost every week. I could probably do it if I needed to. If I had $4,000 at one time that I was willing to part with, I could easily do it there.
True. Okay. Last thing I'll say is that the felonious activities from the NXT parking lot have now hit the mall parking lots in Florida. So watch out, everybody in Florida, if you're going to the mall. You never know when Aldo Fire might jump you and take your car.
And for anyone wondering, the way I would do it, 100 Build-A-Bears. Okay. So I'm Kelly Wells. You can find me on social media. Oh, we should do emails. There are two of them. Brian Alston. Hello, friends. I really like the work Javier Bernal is doing. Every promotion needs a big body hobby type character. He has potential, but runs his mouth too much and gets beaten in the ring. However, he does need to win every once in a while. Bernal reminds me of the time in 1999 when Bob Holly started calling himself the Big Shot. Cousin Crash Holly joined Bob, and they referred to themselves as being super heavyweights. Crash used to bring a scale to the ring. Both started doing hardcore matches, and the gimmick was dropped. Questions. What is the ceiling for Bernal? If Bernal went up to the main roster after WrestleMania, who should he feud with? Don't forget to listen to Saturday's Torch VIP exclusive podcast, NXT 8 Years Back, where Kelly and Tom Stout review the November 13th, 2014 edition of NXT. The main event is an NXT championship match, Adrian Neville versus Sami Zayn. Tom and Kelly also discuss movie trivia this week. They will discuss The Perfect Movie. Unfortunately, the Dark Departure trilogy did not make the cut. Thanks, Brian Alston. The Dark Departure trilogy was made by Tom Stout, and I've seen the third one, and I'm in it. Okay, so I
this threw me. I love, love, love Crash Holly. And I had a relatively hard time when I found out that he died. I was really bummed out. Not like with Owen, where I was like kind of inconsolable for a couple days. Cause like I was going to name my kid after Owen.